Funding for Here and Now comes from the MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, on the web at mathworks.com.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. U.S. Homeland Security officials have raised the terror alert for mass transit systems nationwide to Code Orange in the wake of today's terrorist attacks in London, England. Officials here say they do not have any intelligence indicating similar attacks are planned in the U.S. In Britain, law enforcement officials say that at least 33 people are dead in the 4 bombings that have shut down the London subway system. Brian Paddock of the London Metro Police says over the course of about 1 hour, 3 explosions ripped through underground train stations in central London at the height of the morning commute. A 4th explosion tore the roof off of a crowded double-decker bus near the British Museum.
This clearly was a callous attack on purely innocent members of the public, deliberately designed to kill and injure innocent members of the public.
London police say they did not have any advance warning, nor have they received any claim of responsibility. But a little-known group calling itself the Secret Organization of Al-Qaeda in Europe has posted a web message claiming responsibility. We'll have more on that later in the program. The attacks come as world leaders meet in Scotland, and one day after London was awarded the Summer Olympic Games in 2012. Olympic Committee officials say they still have full confidence in London. Prime Minister Tony Blair said the G8 summit would continue, and he called the attacks barbaric.
We are united in our resolve to confront and defeat this terrorism that is not an attack on one nation, but on all nations and on civilized people everywhere.
Also at the G8 summit, President Bush urged Americans to be extra vigilant today.
The war on terror goes on. I was most impressed by the resolve of all the leaders in the room. Their resolve is as strong as my resolve, and that is we will not yield to these people. We'll not yield to the terrorists. We will find them, we'll bring them to justice, and at the same time we will spread an ideology of hope and compassion that will overwhelm their ideology of hate.
Well, for a sense of the scene in London, we turn now to John Prideaux. He's correspondent for The Economist magazine. He joins us from their studios in London. And John, can you tell us midday what is happening, midday here, later in the day there, what is the scene like in London?
Well, people now are gradually heading home. They've been told by the police that they should begin thinking about how to make their way home. Obviously, the underground train system, which 2.5 million people use every day, is out, so that's not an option. So really the streets are full of people in suits who wouldn't normally leave at this hour. It's just 5:10 here, wandering home, fairly sort of grim-faced, people not really talking very much.
Yeah. And this morning, we're getting reports that people were relatively calm given the situation.
I think they were relatively calm. It was difficult because nobody really knew what was going on. The mobile phone, cell phone networks that people rely on to, you know, find out what their friends are up to were down. It was a suggestion that that was because the networks shut them down to all but sort of emergency users, so people in the fire service, people in the ambulance service. Mm-hmm. There was also a concern that maybe if there had been further devices, they might have been, you know, triggered by a mobile phone or a text message. So people really didn't know what was going on. And it took a long time to establish how many explosions there had been, and also a long time to establish how many casualties. And we're still not really sure. Mm-hmm. As you said in your report, the police say at least 33 people dead.
And dozens more injured. Well, John Prideaux, again, in London at The Economist. Any confirmation that a suicide bomber was involved in the bus bombing portion?
No, not yet. Again, this is a rumour that sort of circulated early. There was some dramatic pictures of the bus that people saw. The roof of it was blown off and some of the sort of back section blown out too. But there's been no confirmation of that, and the police haven't said anything further about that.
John Prideaux, British correspondent for The Economist, speaking to us from London. John, just personal thoughts. Your nerves rattled. Your sense of the day?
Well, it's pretty unpleasant knowing that most of your friends who travel in to work on the tube, you know, not being able to get hold of them first thing in the morning, you know, wondering where people are. Email is a great thing. I think all my friends and people who I know have been emailing each other to say they're okay, but it's pretty scary. I think Londoners, to some extent, are quite phlegmatic about this sort of thing normally, and lived with the sort of threat of Irish Republican terrorism for a while. But I think the nightmare ever since September the 11th was that, you know, a bomb would go off on the underground and you know, people trapped underground. And now that's happened.
Yeah. John Brideau, thanks very much.
Thanks.
We turn now to Michael Goldfarb, also in London. He is the Inside Out documentary unit lead reporter. He's actually just done a long documentary on jihad in Britain and terrorism in Britain. Michael, have you been able to contact any of your contacts in the Muslim community? Have you heard any response? Because, of course, there's a lot of widespread assumption that this was an al-Qaeda attack.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, Robin, I think everybody who works through mobile phones, as we call them here, cell phones, as you call them there, has been working at a disadvantage today because service is at best sporadic because the systems basically crashed, although there were reports earlier in the day that, as John was saying, that they had been shut down by security services because there was the thought that perhaps there were other devices round and about London that could be triggered by a mobile phone call. And I have not been able to make close contact with any of the people, you know, who were my sources on that story, British Jihad. I should say that, you know, going back to at least September 11th, there's been a real sensitivity in the Muslim community to events. And I have often heard expressed that if there were ever a similar kind of attack, you know, an Islamic terrorist attack in London, that people expressed real fear about their safety. But, you know, it's only a few hours, and it will be some time, I think, before it's really clear whether people are going to just kind of, you know, generally turn on the Muslim community here or not.
Actually, I want to jump in, Michael, and say that the Muslim Council of Britain has issued a statement utterly condemning the perpetrators of what appears to be coordinated attacks, utterly condemning the whole event. And you've told me and told listeners through your reports that, in fact, some of the leading jihadists in the mosques in Britain tell their followers, but do not carry out the jihad or the attacks in London.
Yeah, yeah, this was a very curious thing. I was interviewing a guy named Omar Bakri Muhammad, who was probably the most prominent of the radical clerics who is still at liberty. The most radical of them is actually went on trial this week. The U.S. is seeking his extradition, in fact. There may be something in remembering that as well as G8. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Omar Bakri Muhammad, you know, in an interview with me, said very clearly, I am in this country, I've been given asylum by this country, and, you know, Islamic law says that, you know, you can't attack those who give you asylum. So he quite happily, you know, gives lectures and teaches why it's right to, you know, make jihad against crusaders and Jews and other infidels in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Israel, but that, you know, you shouldn't do anything here.
Leading to thoughts it might be an outsider. Michael Goldfarb speaking to us from London. Michael, we want to touch base with you again during the program, so would you stand by there in London for us?
Sure.
We appreciate that. We turn now to two terrorism experts stateside who join us in the studio. Jessica Stern, a professor at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Jessica, welcome back.
Thank you.
Although, you know, whenever you're here, something bad has happened. We're also welcoming Edith Flynn, Professor Emerita of Criminal Justice at Northeastern University. And Professor, welcome to you as well. And Jessica, I want to turn to you first because you just recently attended a conference between London officials and Muslim community leaders. Tell us about that and in light of what happened today.
Well, I think that it would be hard to imagine a city better prepared for this kind of event than London, not just in a technical sense in terms of war training, but also in the way that British authorities are in constant communication with the Muslim community, with the understanding that if they are going to stop the terrorism within, they need to rely on ordinary Muslims who are equally as threatened by this kind of terrorism as anyone else. The thing where I would disagree slightly with Michael, as much as I respect him greatly, I think that we should be more concerned about those types of leaders and individuals in Europe who are not out there in public. Omar Bakri Muhammad is a very, very public figure. He wants to be able to get a lot of attention and has these big websites, and he's obviously, I would say, in a way, a vain man. I'm much less worried about someone like that than I am about the estimated 100 to 200 Islamist jihadis that are operating in the UK and up to 1,000 in Europe.
Well, I want to ask Professor Edith Flynn as well if these attacks are kind of in response to other attacks, because you've said terrorists saw that the Madrid attacks were in effect successful. Can you explain that?
Well, ever since Munich in 1972, when the Olympics were attacked by the PLO, you have generally synchronized attacks that play on the media, they play on the coverage. And from that point on, we knew that major terrorist attacks would be launched, such as the meeting currently with the GS8, the focus in Madrid just before the election, which really turned the election the way the extremists wanted it. So using major events, using vulnerabilities such as subway systems, unfortunately have now become a model and a mode.
Yeah. And Jessica, I want to ask you, this may not be an answerable question, but it strikes all of us. There were just thousands of people gathered in Trafalgar Square yesterday. Nothing happened. Today, this obviously coordinated attack, again, maybe this isn't answerable, but why not? Why wouldn't they choose yesterday? Or is it that something like this takes so much planning?
My guess is that it would be that it takes so much planning and that it would be hard to pull this off just because there happened to be an immediate target of opportunity. But, of course, we really don't know.
Yeah. And we should say you're also author of the book Terror in the Name of God. What is there anything that you can see in looking at the news reports and what we have seen of this morning's bombings? Again, we don't know who was behind the bombings, but if we go by the assumption that it was al-Qaeda or jihadists, is there anything you can see that tells you anything?
Well, we should remember that British authorities did recently warn about the possibility of IRA attacks in England. That said, I think that Michael is absolutely correct. I've heard him earlier today saying that it is most likely to be a member of the al-Qaeda movement, a member organization of the al-Qaeda movement, or sympathizers with al-Qaeda. And the hallmarks are, of course, the simultaneous attacks, an attack on a transportation system, and the fact that the UK is a very major center, actually a hub, for al-Qaeda.
Okay. Well, we have Jessica Stern from Harvard and Edith Flynn, a professor at Northeastern, both experts in terrorism. We're going to ask you both to stay with us during the course of the hour. We'd love to get more of your expertise. We're covering the aftermath of this morning's bombings in London, four bombs that went off within an hour, three at train stations that spanned the city, one aboard a double-decker bus. And by the way, the State Department has set up an emergency telephone line for people to call to find out if any Americans were injured or missing. A lot of tourists, people living in the area. That number is 1-888-407-4747, 1-888-407-4747. We're going to have much more coverage of this story. Stay right here. You are listening to Here and Now. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now, and we're continuing our coverage of the four bombings that have shut down the London subway system. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, to repeat, has raised the U.S. terror alert to orange for mass transit, though he said there were no specific credible reports of threats in this country. Earlier today, I spoke to Yossi Sheffi. He's the director of MIT's Center for Transportation and Logistics here in Boston. He's the author of an upcoming book, The Resilient Enterprise, which looks at how companies can, if you will bounce back after disruptions such as terrorism. And I asked Yossi, how resilient is the British public transportation system?
My guess is that after the initial shock and the so-called first responder operations, they'll be up and running very quickly. In Madrid, for example, the train system, once they cleared the tracks within hours, the rest of Spain was in operation, and even Atocha station within days was back to operation.
And by the way, just on a personal note, I understand, you know, ironically, you were in Madrid during the time of the train bombing there.
Yes, I was there at the entrance to Atocha station when the bombs went off.
Right.
Actually, interestingly, the Spanish authority, following that bombing, now installed the detection device on all entrance to all train stations in and around Spain.
A detection?
Not only in Madrid.
But bomb detection, you mean, or what kind
just
of...
Just like airport. You go through metal detectors just like airport.
What's your sense of what has to happen? I mean, in light of the second attack in London, do you think that all train stations will have to go the way of airports?
The answer is yes and no. The answer is yes, you can do it with train stations, particularly actually subway stations. Subways are particularly vulnerable because of the confined space. But on the other hand, the bus lines are simply indefensible. So what will happen, just like what happened when we started to fortify airports, the next attack was at the train station. As we will fortify the subway station, and maybe this can be done. It's expensive, it introduces inconvenience, but it can be done. I'm afraid it will move to buses.
How prepared is the U.S. transportation system for this kind of attack, do you think?
We are not prepared in terms of avoidance, but no system is. There's no bus system around the world, for example, that is secure enough to avoid suicide bombers, for example, as we see in Israel.
And by the way, we asked, you know, your new book is called The Resilient Enterprise, about companies being resilient in the face of this kind of attacks. What can companies, what can private enterprises do?
They can do a lot. Their objective is to secure the flow of goods and services to their customers. So companies should be thinking about how they do business with their suppliers. Is their supply chain secure and resilient? Can they move product from one supplier to the other? And when one supplier is disrupted, they think about how to move operations between plants so they can move productions from plant to plant. They should think about how much safety stock to keep. They should think about how to communicate post-disaster to the employees, to their stockholders, to the media. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of actions that they can take both in preparing and then after the fact to help bounce back and keep the smooth flow of products and services to their customers.
Mm-hmm. Resilience, something tells me that's going to be quite a buzzword. And it seems that a company being resilient in the light of this horrific bombing today would have had a plan in effect for how to get its employees to work if the public transportation goes.
It's not only how to get their employees to work, it's how to even communicate with their employees. The one thing that always happens in this, it happened in Madrid, it happens in Israel routinely, it happened during 9/11, and it happened this morning in London, is the phone system goes down. Everybody tries to get on the phone to find out if their loved one is okay, what's going on, where they are, how to get home, how to get to work. One thing that government can do is somehow make sure that we have increased capacity of cellular and landline systems. Intel, for example, has emergency centers that have all the communication in the world in every country that they do business, starting with cellular phone, landline, USB, ham radio, anything that you can think of to keep communications going. When news directors talk about confusion, it's because they cannot get to their reporters many times. They don't know what's going on.
Right. So then maybe there's less confusion on the ground, but more communication confusion,
exactly,
making it seem worse.
When CNN all the morning talked about confusion, in my mind, it was the reporters' confusion.
Mm-hmm.
They could not get in touch with people because the cellular lines were down.
Yossi Sheffi is director of the Center for Transportation and Logistics at MIT. He's also written a new book that's coming out soon. It's called The Resilient Enterprise, how, in fact, companies can survive disruptions such as terrorism. Yossi, as we leave you, what one thought would you want to share with public transportation officials in the U.S. today?
Increased awareness. We are living in an age when such terrorism attacks are almost inevitable, and the number one defense against them is the public. We cannot have enough policemen, enough guards around the stations. It is simply the public itself that has to be more vigilant. So finding ways to communicate through ads on buses, through television, through the media, through any means possible to heighten awareness and keep awareness up after weeks of no events.
Yossi, thanks very much.
Thank you, Robin.
Again, that's Yossi Sheffi. He's the director of MIT Center for Transportation and Logistics, and he's based here in Cambridge, Mass., but ironically at a conference about terrorism today. And I want to turn in the minute we have to Edith Flynn, professor of criminal justice at Northeastern University. Edith, do you agree with Yossi that really there may be no way to prevent these attacks, but the most important thing is becoming how to respond?
I think he's correct, because you cannot truly prevent terrorist attacks, particularly of the suicide bomber or the hidden explosives. So the thing that we need to look at is to try to reduce these events to the lowest possible number, not overreact, learn to live with it.
And you've said, I should say, in the seconds we have, not overreact because of these television images that are going around the world. It's important to send a message of calm.
Yes, very much so. I think we need to spread the message that the terrorists will not be able to do away with England or the United States or anything of that kind. And that we are being targeted, we're going to have to develop some tolerance for these kinds of events. Mm. And the most important thing is for government to really look competent in handling it. Mm. And I think England is showing us that today.
A certain resolve. We are certainly seeing that. You're listening to Here and Now. That was Edith Flynn, Professor Emerita of Criminal Justice at Northeastern University. Jessica Stern is with us as well, another terrorism expert. Much more ahead on Here and Now. Stay with us. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. The terror alert on U.S. mass transit systems has been raised to code orange because of the four deadly bombings on the subway system and buses in London, England, at the height of their rush hour this morning. Officials have not yet said who may have been behind those attacks, but a previously unknown group, the secret group of Al-Qaeda's jihad in Europe, has claimed responsibility. We turn now to London for the latest. Pim Fox is a reporter for Dow Jones Newswire. He joins us from the city of London. And Pim, first of all, we understand that it's later in the day in London that people understandably started leaving work early. How are they getting about?
Well, most people are taking to the streets walking or riding their bicycles. It's turned out to be a very lovely day here in London. Obviously, the terrorist activities and the bomb explosions have really cast a pall over the city, but the weather is nice and people are walking, taking their bicycles, and also using boats that are traveling up and down the Thames. So they are dealing with it in a typical British fashion of stoicism and resolve.
Are people still looking for missing loved ones? I mean, we've been in touch with friends in London who can't find friends. Is that still going on?
Yes, that is still a process that is going on and will likely go on into the night. There has really been no complete tally of either fatalities or casualties. The hospitals in the area have been overwhelmed. There are people that are using their telephones and their mobile phones to text messages to television stations to run the names of their family members or friends to ask them to please get in touch with family and home. These are being broadcast throughout the region and on all of the major television stations. So the search for survivors and for victims is still going on.
Reminiscent of New York and Washington and Pennsylvania post 9/11. Any sense of when the transportation will be up again?
We've heard some indication that they are hoping to get the underground system, that's London's subway system, up and running by tomorrow morning rush hour. Obviously, a lot of stations will still be closed. A lot of them are now crime zones. And these sites will obviously be investigated for residue of explosive devices. But there is some hope that the underground system on a limited basis will be up tomorrow. Buses, we hope, will be running. They are starting to run some of the buses in central London later today. And it looks as though by the weekend there will be at least some coherent plan for a London transport.
Pim Fox, reporter for Dow Jones Newswire, speaking to us from London. Pim, thanks. And joining us here in the studio in Boston, Jessica Stern, a professor at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. She's been here throughout the hour. Thanks, Jessica. And Edith Flynn, professor emerita of criminal justice at Northeastern University, joins us as well. And Jessica, I want to go back to you because I understand you have just been spending a lot of time in Europe taking a look at the problem of terrorism there. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think we need to understand that Europe has really become a central front for the Al-Qaeda movement, both as an attractive place to recruit and as a potentially appealing target. And I have been spending quite a bit of time actually in the Netherlands interviewing in the Moroccan Dutch community. This is a community, as you know, that has been involved in or at least a few members have been involved in terrorism in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. and it's a very distressed community. There's a tremendous amount of prejudice in the Netherlands against Dutch Moroccans. This became quite severe, according to the Dutch Moroccans, after September 11th, even before the murder of Theo van Gogh. And I think what's going on there helps us to understand actually what's going on in Europe in general. It's a community that is very, very confused about its identity. Many of the people I talked to said they felt Dutch until September 11th. After September 11th, people thought of them as Moroccan. But young people, second or third generation young people who are the most likely recruits, it turns out, go to Morocco, and they're not Moroccan. They don't speak the local languages. They are completely Dutch. And I think this feeling of humiliation and confused identity is a major factor in leading to the problem we see in Europe.
Because they're ripe for recruitment.
They're ripe for recruitment.
And Edith Flynn, Professor Flynn, you've said the same thing, that there are more Muslim immigrants than ever who don't feel assimilated and feel discriminated against.
Very much so. I think this is an issue even in Holland. It has some history. You had the Moluccans who staged the hijacking of a train and a school. That was a very bad event, again, by young people who had not been assimilated into society. France has a very serious problem in terms of young people of a Muslim background and not being given the same opportunities. There is an issue of racism. The same thing can be said about Germany and England. And I do recall, for instance, after the Iranian crisis here in the United States, anybody who looked like what people thought Iranians would look like were attacked. Mm. So I'm very worried that this incident may lead to this kind of discrimination and even accentuate it.
Well, Anna Jessica, what parallels do you see between this attack this morning? And again, it's hazy. There's been no official announcement of who was behind the attacks, although on a website there is a group claiming to represent jihad in Europe for al-Qaeda, which has claimed the attack. But in Madrid, we saw 10 bombs hidden in sports bags exploding on 4 commuter trains. What parallels do you see?
Well, one parallel, of course, is the attack on public transportation. Another is simultaneous attacks, which we generally think of as a hallmark of al-Qaeda. Rush hour, the claiming, of course, we have no idea whether the group that has claimed credit is in fact responsible or even remotely responsible, but they, you know, for all we know, maybe some people involved in putting up that website were at least sympathizers. The opposition to the war in Iraq, I think, is a very important element here. The war in Iraq is, it's impossible to understand what is going on in the world of terrorism today without factoring in the war in Iraq, which has really assisted recruitment for the al-Qaeda movement.
And I also want to throw in that there's a political event, the election just around the Madrid bombings and the G8 summit happening in Scotland.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, I think that Islamic radicals are targeting occasions such as the meeting in Scotland, such as an election, trying very much to influence the politics in Europe as well as the United States. And I think, unfortunately, they're quite effective.
Yeah. And we've talked about how we have this disenfranchised community. But is there any sense on either of your parts? We've been hearing from experts, and we're going to continue to, who say that we may have reached a point where there will be no thinking of preventing these, or at least the thinking of preventing these attacks will not be primary. It's more, how do you react to them, or how do you remove the problem, Jessica?
I don't agree with that. I think that we may not be capable of preventing all strikes, but I think it's critically important that we do our best to try. And law enforcement authorities in the United States claim to have thwarted 30 major strikes globally together with their international counterparts. This is important to remember. We need to focus on all aspects of the problem, prevention, increasing resilience, mitigation, and so on.
Jessica Stern is a professor at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and an expert in the field of terrorism. She authored the book Terror in the Name of God. We're also pleased to have Edith Flynn with us. She's a professor emerita of criminal justice at Northeastern University. Again, terrorism is one of her expertises, if I may. And a light, but a very brief light moment because of the news of this morning, 4 bombs in London. We're going to continue to follow that story for you, including coming up a story about news from Dublin. You're listening to Here and Now. And as we said, we want to touch in Dublin. Sean Boyne is a terrorism expert with Jane's Defense Weekly. He's followed the Irish Republican Army and the splinter group called the Real IRA. He says today's attacks, which he says are most likely the work of a Middle East group, do not fit the model of an IRA attack.
Well, for the most part, when the IRA attacked civilian targets, there was normally a warning given. Now, there were some exceptions to that. Back in 1974, the IRA set off bombs in England. One was in Guildford. Five people, I think, were killed. Another was in Birmingham. And in those cases, no warnings were given.
Has there ever been an IRA bombing using a suicide bomber?
No. I mean, it just doesn't fit in with the ethos of the IRA. Mm. I suppose the closest they would have come to it was back in the early 90s, they abducted a Catholic, Mr. Gillespie, who was working in the kitchen of a British Army base, and they made him into a human bomb. He was tied into a car. He was forced, a bomb was placed on board. He was forced to drive the car to a British Army checkpoint, and then they detonated the bomb, and he was blown to pieces, and five soldiers were killed. So essentially, you know, suicide bombing is not part of the ethos of the IRA, but on this occasion, they, you know, they used this, what has been called a human bomb attack.
Sean Boyne, a terrorism expert with Jane's Defense Weekly, and we are speaking to you from Dublin. How are people there reacting to the bombing in London?
I think a lot of shock in Dublin. Ireland has come through a long period when there were bombs going off and terrorism. And I think that when we see bombs going off in London again, it revives a lot of old bad memories. And I suppose from a selfish point of view, there are also Irish people in London. Obviously, you know, we're concerned about anybody who is caught up, no matter what their nationality or race or creed, but people in Ireland would be worried about their own relations and loved ones.
Nerve-wracking time. Sean Boyne, terrorism expert with Jane's Defense Weekly, speaking to us from Dublin, Ireland. Sean, thanks.
Okay, no problem.
Well, London police are still saying there's no claim of responsibility for today's attacks in London, but in a web forum, one obscure al-Qaeda group has stepped forward. Rita Katz is director of the SITE Institute, short for the Search for International Terrorist Entities. She monitors terrorist websites. Rita, we understand there was no web activity before the attacks, but what are the websites saying now after the bombings?
Well, one message that was posted on a message board in a form of a message board indicates that they are claiming responsibility, and they sign it under the name of the secret organization group of organization calling itself Al-Qaeda Al-Jihad in Europe, the jihadi base in Europe. And they claim that they carried out the attacks as response to the actions of the Brits in Iraq and Afghanistan and the war that they're having against the Muslims. The message also indicates that they are warning governments of Denmark and Italy to stop their activities in Afghanistan and in Iraq, otherwise they will be attacked as well. Now, at this stage, we don't know how reliable this message is. This message was not uploaded by a poster who is known to be an official spokesman, is not posted on a message board that is known to be an official message board on an official website of a certain group. So, and was not posted by a poster who's known to the group. In some forms, they took down this message, and actually, you hardly can find it right now on the internet. So at this stage, we really cannot indicate that this is the group that claimed responsibility. Also, just to remind you that after the Madrid bombing, the same thing happened. There were groups, including the Abu Hafiz brigades, that claimed responsibility for the attack, and later on we learned that that wasn't the case.
Rita Katz is director of the SITE Institute, the Search for International Terrorist Entities. They monitor terrorist websites. Rita, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
And we will continue our coverage of the aftermath of the bombings this morning in London. You're listening to Here and Now. I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. Updating the top story of the day, British Prime Minister Tony Blair says his country will not be intimidated by terrorists after four nearly simultaneous bombings killed at least 33 people on the London travel system. Sky News in Britain reports as many as 1,000 people are injured. Earlier today, I spoke with Tom Brake. He is a member of the British Parliament for the Liberal Democrat Party. He's also chair of the National Council for Civil Protection. He works on transportation issues for his party. And I asked him, how were terrorists able to launch this attack?
I think the problem with a city at the size of London with 7 million people is that if you have a dedicated band of terrorist murderers who are seeking to murder innocent civilians, you can never stop that sort of thing happening. Mm. The level of security that is present in London has forced the terrorists to go for very soft targets. I think they would ideally have liked to have attacked Westminster, where I sit. That might have been one of their preferred targets, or high-profile targets like Heathrow Airport. Because they've not been able to, they've gone for very soft targets, innocent civilians going about their daily business. I think the cowardice they have shown is extreme.
We know the bombings took place over the course of an hour. Were you happy with how soon the system was shut down?
I'm confident that London and London's transport system responded as quickly as it would be humanly possible to do in a situation which certainly for the first half an hour or so must have been extremely confusing for everybody, where it was not clear how many incidents had taken place, whether the initial reports were that perhaps a power surge had caused the tube system to go down as opposed to bomb blasts.
Right.
So this is something that London practices for on a regular basis. The communication systems are worked out. The systems kicked in and worked very effectively.
And one last question, Tom Brake. This may be just a guess on your part, but you also may be hearing from Londoners. Do you think they're going to get back on the tube and the buses tomorrow?
I think that...
Are people going to be afraid?
Well, I think clearly people will be more cautious, but I think the reassurance they've got is that, first of all, the police and security services will be working extremely hard to try and identify those responsible from, for instance, the very extensive CCTV network that we have on our public transportation system.
So you think you might be able to actually see images?
Well, it is very common nowadays on the tube and on buses, for instance, to have full video on them, so that I think it's quite likely that if for instance, these were not suicide bombers who may have been killed in the incident, if they were individuals who had planted bombs and then left the tube train or the buses, that it may well be possible to identify those responsible. So I think people can be assured that the security services and the police are working extremely hard to identify those responsible. And I know tomorrow morning I've got a journey to make which will require me to come into London, go through London on the tube and go out again on a train to go up north. And I intend making that journey.
Tom Brake is a member of Parliament. He is with the Liberal Democrat Party, also chair of the National Council for Civil Protection. He spoke to us from London. Mr. Brake, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, we have some last thoughts for you for this hour. We're joined again by Jessica Stern, professor at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and Edith Flynn, professor emerita of criminal justice at Northeastern University. Jessica Stern, a lecturer as well. And I just want to have commented on the MP there speaking about how he's going to get right back on the train. But we heard in the course of the hour that these trains are now crime scenes, and we're not sure how soon they will open. But Jessica, I want to ask you something. You were speaking earlier, having just been in Europe, really researching the jihad in Europe, as it's called, and this sort of homegrown, disenfranchised population that feels like they have nothing to live for and perfect for recruits for al-Qaeda. But I want to ask you something. What if these bombing attacks in London were, in fact, the work of people who have just recently come in and perhaps sent there by someone like Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who is running al-Qaeda insurgency in Iraq?
Well, I actually think that that's a very good first guess, that Zarqawi would have been involved. because he has been involved not only in running the jihad in Iraq, but very involved in Europe for quite a long time. And in fact, we're seeing already a couple of European jihadis, and there are an estimated 300 Europeans active in Iraq. We've now seen at least a couple of them coming back to Europe to recruit. Zarqawi has seen Europe as an important, very important venue. There's no question that we need to consider him for any kind of attack that appears to be linked to al-Qaeda in Europe.
Yeah, and Edith, this seems to, and I'm sorry, Professor Flynn, this also seems to beg a question, or at least debate of a question that I've heard percolating up lately, that al-Qaeda might be the figment of an overactive imagination of people in the Pentagon, or, you know, much larger, it's sort of become much larger a boogeyman than it actually is. Your sense of what exactly al-Qaeda is, and again, we have no we don't know for sure that they were behind today's attacks.
I think the best thing we know about them, it is a very widespread organization, not necessarily very cohesive. So we're talking about a multi-headed hydra, many areas in which people are active, not necessarily all on one concept or on one base. Mm. There has been a communique from Zarqawi in terms of redirecting their efforts to Europe and particularly against the United States. So I agree with Jessica. I think we should look for some threads there.
Mm. And I know you also want to make a point. We've heard today from people who say that we have to defend against the attacks, but we also have to become more resilient and being prepared in the aftermath.
Right.
But you want to make the point that there is another element that needs to be absolutely touched on.
9/11, really, we were caught with our defenses down. We had no intelligence. The key to preventing terrorism and least reducing it to any degree we can is intelligence. After 9/11, we thought they would take at least 10 years for the United States to get up to snuff. We're sort of halfway now. Mm. We have to build our intelligence capabilities, the coordination between many agencies. We still have our agencies in turf battles. They may tell you otherwise, but there's still a problem there.
And Jessica, in the minute or so we have, you were saying that you attended a conference between London officials and Muslim communities. You told us that they are phoning each other all the time. So, in fact, London may have been ahead of the game. Is the U.S. doing that kind of contacting that you think they should be doing?
I doubt they are doing the kind of contacting the Muslim community that the police are in London, because it's quite phenomenal what's going on in London. And yet we see that it isn't necessarily going to prevent major strikes. So it's critically important. We need to learn from them. But even that, unfortunately, will not be enough.
Yeah. Jessica Stern, professor at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. She's also author of the book Terror in the Name of God. Edith Flynn, professor emerita of criminal justice at Northeastern University. Thank you both so much for spending some time with us today. And again, to recap the story that we've been following, the aftermath of the bombings today in London, 4 blasts striking London's transportation system, 3 in the Tube, which is the huge underground subway, underground and above ground subway system during morning rush hour. Also, a double-decker bus was attacked. At least 33 people are thought to be dead. A group calling itself the Secret Organization of Al-Qaeda in Europe has posted a web claim of responsibility. Officials do not know if that is at all true. We'll continue following this story for you on the station that you're listening to, and of course tomorrow on Here and Now. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
For a cassette or CD of Here and Now, go to our website, here-now.org, or call 1-800-909-9287. Cassettes or CDs are $15 each, which includes shipping and handling.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, on the web at mathworks.com.